All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is May 20th, 2026. Happy Groundhog's Day. It's that special day when Jensen Huang comes out of his hole, and if he sees his shadow, we get three more months of the AI bubble. It's NVIDIA earnings after the bell today. That's, of course, the big news that everybody is waiting for. But in the meantime, we've got Samsung workers, 47,000 of them, are about to go on strike starting tomorrow. Apparently, last-ditch efforts to preserve the status quo at Samsung have failed. They were in post-mediation talks. Mediation had already broken down. We reported this story last week, thanks to a tip from our own M&J, that this was probably going to happen, that they were basically, this was the last chance to prevent the strike. So this is going to work wonders for the memory shortage. 47,000 Samsung workers going on strike. You've already got memory prices have gone through the roof. Now Samsung, the biggest chip maker in the world, is going to shut down. Or at least partially shut down. So this is going to make memory even more expensive, phones, computers even more expensive at a time when Sam Altman and co. are already buying up all the memory in the world. Now, what's at stake here is it's the bonuses, the annual bonuses for these workers. Right now, bonuses at Samsung are capped at 50% of a worker's salary. And you might be sitting there saying, well, hey, a 50% bonus, half my salary in a lump sum cash payment sounds really good. But then you talk about what's actually going on. The profit margins at these memory companies are exploding. And some of these memory chip makers don't have that cap, which means their workers are getting bonuses in the dollar equivalent, hundreds of thousands of dollars in bonuses. And of course, Samsung's workers are not getting that. They're getting a fraction of that because it's capped. So the Samsung union is demanding that that bonus cap be removed. And they want 15% of the company's operating profits to be dedicated to this bonus pool going forward. And again, you're talking for the average worker at Samsung, something like $600,000 at stake here for that worker that his peers at SK Hynix and other memory makers are currently getting. Of course, Samsung is saying that would permanently hamstring profitability, saying something we talked about yesterday, that this memory boom is not going to last forever. Sooner or later, that story is going to run its course and prices are going to revert back to normal. And Samsung will have a permanent drag on profitability if they agree to the union's demands. So we'll see what comes out of this one. But that strike starts tomorrow. Now we've got, like we said, NVIDIA earnings after the bell. And even as the whole market is holding its breath on NVIDIA earnings, we've got this survey from Bank of America just came out, a global fund manager survey. 34% of fund managers surveyed now say AI capital spending is the most likely source of a systemic credit event in the world. 34%. It's second only to private credit, which was at 42% of fund managers say private credit is the most likely cause of the next financial crisis, if you will. But more than a third of them now say AI CapEx spending. Again, we'll see after the bell. NVIDIA's earnings probably going to be good again. The hyperscalers have not slowed their CapEx. So, you know, all indications are NVIDIA is going to beat and raise again. Three quarters in a row, the market hasn't cared, and NVIDIA has sold off after posting a beat and raise. God forbid they post a miss or they guide light. We'll see what happens after the bell. I'm sure we'll have plenty to say about that tomorrow morning. Also going on this morning, Target earnings came out, and they were suspiciously good. It was a really good quarter from Target here. Comparable sales up 5.6%. This is the first quarter since their new CEO has taken over. Now, Target has had like 3 or 4 years in a row of just dreadful comparable sales. Walmart has been eating their lunch. So this is the first good quarter I've seen from Target in a long time. The comps were triple the average estimates here. Just really good numbers all around. Target had announced earlier this year they were cutting prices on like 3,000 seasonal items trying to drive sales. So maybe this is a case of the solution to higher prices is higher prices, because Target was getting clobbered by inflation and cost-conscious consumers, and maybe those price cuts were finally able to bring people back to the store. Lowe's, on the other hand, just reported their earnings, and they were identical to Home Depot, 0.6% comparable store sales. 0.6% growth in a 3.8% inflationary environment. That is anemic, or that's actually a decline in real sales. The same number Home Depot reported. Same story. Consumers are strapped. Housing market frozen. Rinse, repeat. Not a good quarter for Lowe's here. We've got an interesting one coming out of Canada this morning as well. Two Canadian pension funds were planning on selling a $3 billion stake in private equity funds until they saw what people were willing to pay. And then it turns out they weren't $3 billion stakes in private equity funds. They were more like $1.5 billion stakes in private equity funds. Oh, yeah, price discovery is a bitch. And we're learning in the private equity space. So those Canadian pension funds have scrapped the plans to sell those private equity stakes because they're not going to get anywhere near what they advertise. Again, guys, this private equity bubble and private credit bubble to go along with it, there is a price discovery reckoning coming. You can only hide from it for so long. Sooner or later, they're going to have to sell. We've got an interesting story. The USDA, the Department of Agriculture, has booted 10 banks from their rural loan guarantee program. And I noticed something about the population of these 10 banks. There was two in particular, plus a third, that stuck out at me a little bit. We're going to talk about that one. It overlaps with a story I recently covered on this channel. We've got China is buying 200 Boeing jets. That's a little disappointing, but at the same time, it's a little encouraging. I know that's a little bit of a contradiction there. Let me explain. 200 Boeing jets, that's only about half of what they were hoping to sell. Part of this big Trump Xi summit, all the CEOs got on a plane and went over there. They were hoping to sell 400. They got 200. All right, so it's less than they were hoping for. But at the same time, this is the first order China has placed for U.S. manufactured airliners since 2017. So at least they bought something. And then there's always the asterisk in there that China's saying we're going to buy these jets in accordance with market conditions, demand principles, all this other stuff. Kind of like a little asterisk that they're putting on there to say, yeah, maybe we're going to buy it, but it's probably going to take forever, twice as long as they say it's going to take, kind of like previous deals for soybeans and things where they almost never meet the milestones they agree to. It takes them longer than expected. Something they were going to buy anyway, but at least they didn't come back from China completely empty-handed. What else we have? Supermarket price controls in the UK. Not yet. Not quite yet. They're stopping short of outright price controls, but the government is asking very politely, as only our British friends could do, asking very politely, would you please put your own price controls on things like milk, bread, and eggs in the supermarket? And of course, supermarkets are saying, no, that's not how that works. Price controls lead to shortages, but sign of the times, guys, if they're asking politely for voluntary price controls, I guess that means that mandatory price controls probably aren't too far off. Scotland is already pushing for mandatory price caps, although it's not law yet. Sign of the times, guys, inflation is coming back. Food shortages, you know, Mish and I were talking about this morning. It's probably next year's headline, maybe not even next year's headline, maybe this fall or maybe even late summer's headline. But food is about to get a lot more expensive thanks to fertilizer and overall inflation due to the war in Iran. Along the lines of commodities and resource inflation, Indonesia is outright nationalizing natural resources. This is having big effect on things like palm oil and nickel. Indonesia is basically saying if you want to sell anything that is mined or harvested in this country, you need to go through a government agency to do it. That's something that has historically not gone over so well with their predominantly Chinese buyers. We'll see what comes out of that story. And last but not least, Stellantis has signed a deal to make Chinese electric vehicles at their factories in Europe. This is after Stellantis has posted tens of billions of dollars in losses due to overinvestment in electric vehicles. Now they've got these factories made to build electric vehicles and there's nothing to do with them. So, all right, might as well let the Chinese come in and build their vehicles in our factories. Chinese are looking for a way to get around European tariffs. Win-win for them. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the Melonheads because we do this every business day. And the S&P 500 is higher by 34 points, about a half a percent to the upside this morning. The Dow is up 236 points, erasing yesterday's losses, also about a half a percent higher. And the NASDAQ is up by 217 points, 0.75% in the green. Stocks up ahead of those NVIDIA earnings later today. The U.S. dollar is marginally higher here, 3 basis points, essentially unchanged, 99.35 for the dollar. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are down, but still they're down from a very high level. Yields, the 10-year in particular, holding above that 4.6 level. We got pretty high yesterday. For now, the 30-year, 5.166%, that's down by 1.5. The 10-year yield is at 4.652. That's lower by 2 points and change. Now, yesterday we went as high as 4.69. Guys, these bond market, these yields are up. These are going to start problems. I saw another article in Bloomberg talking about how we're in the danger zone where interest rates are going to start causing problems for vehicles, for home sales, for possibly hyperscaler CapEx. All right, moving on. The 2-year yield, 4.097, lower by 2.5 points. And the 1 month is unchanged at 3.614. Looking over at Bitcoin, $77,449 is priced on Coinbase. That's higher by about $600 from yesterday. Bitcoin is holding the 50-day moving average for now after a rough weekend and late last week. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got spot gold is $20 higher this morning, $4,502 for spot gold. That's up by about 0.5%. Spot silver at $75.58, higher by $1.88 or 2.57% higher. I like this shiny silver and gold trading in tandem with stocks still here, though. Guys, that makes me nervous. It's been making me nervous for a while now. Can't quite put my finger on it. I get it, the dollar and interest rates, but I don't like to see the shiny trading in tandem with stocks, even if it's green for the day. Looking over at copper, we're down 1.25%. Platinum, 1.75% lower. Palladium lower by 4.1%. And oil is off by 3% this morning, $101. Let's take a look here at the oil chart. Nice red candle here. President Trump made some comments like he would end the war in Iran quickly. Oil sold off a couple of bucks on that news. But the market is having less and less of these jawboning comments are having less and less of an impact on the market the more they're used. Law of diminishing returns applies to presidential jawboning of oil prices, apparently. So yeah, $101 here, still above the 50-day moving average until the next jawboning episode. Stay tuned. All right, here's the big one this morning. Over 47,000 Samsung electronics workers set to strike as wage talks break down, sending shares lower. A strike involving more than 47,000 Samsung electronics workers will begin on Thursday, after wage negotiations between the company and its union broke down, sending shares of the South Korean chip giant falling 3%. The union had agreed to the mediation proposal from South Korea's National Labor Relations Commission, but Samsung Electronics rejected it, the government body said. Choi Sung-ho, the spokesman for the labor union, said in a statement Wednesday that Samsung had requested more time for negotiations. However, the company said on Wednesday at 11 a.m. local time that no decision had been made. Choi said, leading to the impasse. The union's walkout is likely to be limited after a South Korean court had previously ordered that the strike not interfere with safety protection facilities or obstruct work to prevent damage to facilities and semiconductor wafers. The union's demands centered on Samsung's performance-based bonus system. It's seeking performance bonuses equivalent to 15% of Samsung's operating profit, the removal of bonus payout caps, and a formalized bonus structure, among other measures. These are huge numbers. They could potentially mean millions of dollars of payouts for many employees at Samsung, said Camel Dimage, partner and portfolio manager at North of South Capital. Most of the deadlock centered on the permanent removal of the bonus cap, as Samsung historically capped bonuses at 50% of a worker's salary, Dimage said. This means that the massive profits Samsung is reaping would not be passed on to employees. That 50% bonus cap is costing workers hundreds of thousands of dollars at Samsung's plants right now because the profits have exploded to such levels that were it not for that cap, the existing bonus structure would have been immense for these people. But uncapping bonuses would mean a permanent drag on Samsung's profitability, he added, pointing out that the union request for 15% of operating profits was higher than the 10% agreed by workers at rival SK Hynix. All right, that's factual. SK Hynix does have the 10% of profits, but SK Hynix does not have the 50% bonus cap. And so the bonus that they get at SK Hynix is far larger than the one that they're getting at Samsung right now. We have to think what happens beyond this boom. This boom will not last forever. At some point, supply and demand will normalize and memory prices will come down. That is according to this analyst, Mr. Dimich. And I agree. The prices have just gone so cuckoo in the memory space that it just can't last. It's going to come slamming down. I don't know when it's going to come slamming down, but it will. Anyway, that's going on here. Oh, and by the way, I just saw this headline. This just popped up. I'm so sick of seeing this stuff. But here it is. Jeff Bezos says 2 to 3 year timeline for space data centers is a little ambitious. You think just a little ambitious? Or as I was saying, every time I hear Elon Musk talk about this, data centers in space. Yeah. Have you ever done something, you know, like bend over, tie your shoes or something? It's a little harder than it used to be. Your knees hurt when you stand up. And then you think to yourself, wow, that would have been a lot easier in orbit. No, nobody says that. Because doing things in space is freaking hard. Some might say impossible. And building gargantuan data centers in space is a stupid idea. And I agree with Jeff Bezos here. It's a little ambitious. Maybe even more than a little ambitious. Stop talking about data centers in space. Good God. Anyways, as that's going on, AI data center borrowing rapidly climbs Wall Street's risk list. Apparently, it's now almost tied with private credit for the biggest risk out there. Borrowing tied to AI data center boom is quickly climbing Wall Street's list of potential credit threats as investors increasingly worry that the breakneck pace of financing could sow the seeds of the next market shock. Well, nobody saw that coming. Roughly 34% of global fund managers surveyed by Bank of America earlier this month said AI hyperscaler capital spending was the most likely source of a future systemic credit event, double the share from April. It doubled in a month. Gee, maybe because they increased their CapEx and because they're using special purpose vehicles and off-balance sheet debt to hide how much they're really borrowing to build these things. Just throwing it out there. U.S. private credit remains the top concern at 42% of respondents, albeit down from 57% last month. I think those private credit concerns will probably come back. But for now, the stories about gated redemptions are kind of like last month's headline, but they will be back. The results highlight a rapid shift in what investors see as the market's biggest credit threat. Tech companies have borrowed more than $300 billion from U.S. investors to fund AI spending since the beginning of last year, with bankers predicting billions more to come in the months ahead. The concern is that firms are loading up on unprecedented amounts of debt to fund AI buildouts in which payoffs remain uncertain. And they misspelled non-existent there. Payoffs remain non-existent. Only the hardware makers are making money on AI. Freaking nobody else is. None of the large language models, none of these AI agent companies, they all lose money hand over fist. Only the guys selling the hardware telling you the demand is insane. They're the only ones making money. Even the NeoClouds, CoreWeave, Nebius, Iron, they're losing money like crazy, and the losses are getting bigger faster. But yeah, payoffs remain uncertain. Meanwhile, Target's quarterly sales improve as the turnaround gains steam. This was a good quarter for Target, dare I say a suspiciously good quarter, considering it was the CEO's first. Target's turnaround got a big lift after posting its best comparable sales growth in 4 years and boosting its outlook. The retailer has been struggling to revive growth after a pandemic-fueled boom, and Wednesday showed that it's making progress. Comparable sales gained 5.6% last quarter, tripling the average estimate, as the chain raised its revenue guidance for the year by 2 percentage points to about 4%. Last quarter was the retailer's first under new CEO Michael Fiddelke and shows that the chain strategy, which includes freshening up merchandise and stores and integrating more technology operations, is paying off. All right, 5.6% comps. That is phenomenal, especially because Target has had deeply negative comps for 4 years in a row. So that's a really good quarter. But I have to note, it's the first quarter under the new CEO. And I have seen this before. All right. I saw this when I used to work in nuclear. Oh, we got a new vice president or we got a new director. And then magically in the first month after the new director shows up, all the performance indicators go from yellow to green. Oh my God, our performance is so great. And then you realize all they did was twist around the definitions or juke the stats to make themselves look good on their first month on the job. I have seen this before. I'm not saying that's definitely happening here. All I'm saying is this is very suspicious. And this is a really good number on the new CEO's first quarter. Really good number. That being said, Target has done things like cut prices. 3,000 items, seasonal items, they cut prices on, especially apparel, things like that. All right. They are revamping their stores. Maybe that's working, or maybe the new CEO's full of it. I don't know. But Target stock right now looks like the market is kind of siding with the suspicions here, because the stock was up a half a percent a few minutes ago. All of a sudden, it's taken a dive down 5%. They must have said something on the conference call that investors didn't like. I don't know what that was, but this is all just in the last couple of minutes here. Target has dropped 5%. All right. Meanwhile, we've got Lowe's spring sales are solid and keeps annual forecasts unchanged. This was virtually identical to Home Depot's report. Lowe's said rising online sales and demand from professional contractors during spring boosted its first quarter earnings, but it kept its full year outlook unchanged, citing macro housing market challenges. The chain's comparable sales rose 0.6%. That is the same number that Home Depot posted for comps. But this came in lower than expected. Lowe's adjusted earnings per share beat expectations at $3.03. U.S. consumers remain squeezed due to higher fuel costs in the wake of the Iran war, even though there are some signs that the nation's housing slump may finally be ending. An index of market conditions from the National Association of Home Builders and Wells Fargo showed that U.S. home builder sentiment rebounded in May. I'm not familiar with this data. The only thing I've seen from home builders has been absolutely dreadful over the last few months. So I'll have to circle back and figure out what it was that the NAHB just put out that makes them think that. But the housing market remains frozen in place. That's hurting Lowe's. And Lowe's is currently down 1.9%, trading at $214.25, off by a little more than $4 this morning. Meanwhile, Canadian pensions scrap their $3 billion stake sales on valuations. Oh, price discovery. Oh, the floor is price discovery. Quick, everybody, jump up on the table. And two Canadian pension funds have shelved efforts to sell private equity fund stakes after valuations missed expectations, according to people familiar with the matter. The Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board has halted its process. It began earlier this year to sell fund stakes anticipated to be worth about $1.5 billion. The people said, asking not to be identified because the matter is private. Additionally, this other pension fund, which is made up of all this French stuff that I'm not even going to try to pronounce, but this other pension fund suspended an undertaking it started in February to sell an estimated $1.5 billion of Chinese private equity assets, the people said. The pensions, which had both been advised by Greenhill on the potential sales, stopped the process recently, as buyers offered to take the portfolios at discounts deeper than their expectations, the people said. In other words, these assets are not worth what they say they're worth. I know, I'm as shocked as you are to learn that after years of hiding from price discovery, as if it was like the tax man or a Jehovah Witness, all of a sudden we're learning that those prices are lower than they told us they were. I'm as surprised as you are. The Lacasse portfolio, which includes funds managed by HSG, formerly known as Sequoia Capital China, Warburg Pincus, and Boyu Capital Investment Management, was priced at a 50% discount by some buyers, one of the people said. Oh, okay. A 50% discount to what they're advertising as the net asset value in these funds. Yeah, all I can say, guys, price discovery is a bitch. And the other thing I would say is nobody saw this coming. All right, this one was kind of interesting. This one is in Brownfield Ag News. All right, this is a pretty obscure website, but I promise there's a point here. USDA pulls 10 institutions from rural loan guarantee programs over delinquent loans. All right, delinquent loans in these USDA. Hey, this kind of sounds like a story I did recently, doesn't it? That's interesting. The USDA is removing 10 lenders from rural development guaranteed loan programs as part of an effort to reduce delinquencies and strengthen oversight. In a statement on Monday, Secretary Brooke Rollins says the lenders' $620 million in overdue loans make up nearly half of the department's delinquencies. Just these 10 lenders in this program make up more than half the delinquencies. Okay, Florida-based North Avenue Capital accounts for the largest share of 90-day delinquencies at $168.5 million tied to USDA business and industry loan guarantees. Note to self, investigate North Avenue Capital. Oh, my God. The loans are most often used to fund hospitality, manufacturing, and energy investments. Okay, then they list a couple of these projects in default. Other lenders no longer able to offer 1RD guaranteed loans include Greater Nevada Credit Union, U.S. Eagle Federal Credit Union, Community Bank and Trust of West Georgia, Genesis Credit Union, Byline Bank, Optus Bank, Celtic Bank, and Bank of Montgomery, and ReadyCap Commercial. All right, we got to talk about a few of these. First of all, Celtic Bank. That's one of those banking as a service outfits. I often see Celtic Bank associated with a lot of fintech platforms that are making loans alongside names like Cross River Bank of Teaneck, New Jersey. Celtic Bank is one of those banks that will rubber stamp loans provided you buy it right off their books the second they rubber stamp it. I am not at all surprised to see Celtic Bank or Celtic Bank included in this list. But the other two names that really jumped out at me, first of all, Community Bank and Trust of West Georgia. That is the same Community Bank and Trust that just failed about 3 weeks ago. And I did a video about this, about how their USDA loans were going bad and how these lords of lending a-holes, these guys were doing this podcast talking about how they're using AI to automate the loan underwriting process. And now, oh, I can issue 100 loans when I used to only be able to do 20. What's the worst thing that could happen? Oh, our bank could fail and we could get kicked out of the USDA program. Yeah, but besides that, it's great. So Community Bank and Trust made the list, and also Greater Nevada Credit Union made the list. Now, that's important. That jumped out at me because after I made that video about the Community Bank and Trust, I got emails from several people who used to work at Greater Nevada Credit Union, and they were all talking about this guy, Jeremy Gilpin. There he is. Hi, Jeremy. Jeremy Gilpin used to be the vice president of Greater Nevada Credit Union. And he was in charge of USDA lending. And as it happens, Jeremy Gilpin was also a board member and the former CEO of Community Bank and Trust. Interesting. The same guy who I'm getting emails from people who say, this is the dirtbag who failed the bank. The same guy was CEO or vice president at two of the 10 banks that were just kicked out of the USDA's program because these 10 banks account for more than half of the losses. Huh. So it's almost like Mr. Jeremy here. He looks all sophisticated with his watch and his suit here. Oh, he's been rubber stamping loans that cost the taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars when they go bad. Thanks, Jeremy. Interesting. By the way, shout out to everybody from Nevada, Greater Nevada, whatever that, I can't remember the name of it, but it jumped out at me as soon as I saw it. Greater Nevada Credit Union. Shout out to everybody from Greater Nevada who emailed me warning me about Mr. Gilpin. There he is. All right. China confirms order for 200 Boeing planes and calls aviation a key area for U.S. cooperation. All right. We knew they were going to buy some planes. It's less than we were hoping. China's Commerce Ministry on Wednesday confirmed an agreement to purchase 200 Boeing aircraft, as well as engines and spare parts, mostly because they don't have any other choice. There's really only two options, and Airbus can't supply everything China needs. A Commerce Ministry official said aviation was key to deepening cooperation between China and the U.S. In accordance with the important consensus reached by the Chinese and U.S. leaders, China's aviation industry will introduce 200 Boeing aircraft based on commercial principles and its own needs for air transport development. They're kind of saying we're going to buy these at our own pace, maybe not all at once. U.S. President Trump told Fox News last week that China would purchase 200 Boeing planes. While the figure was less than half of what analysts had expected, it marked the first major Chinese order for aircraft since 2017. Again, is this the result of the summit, or is this just something that they were going to buy anyway? Probably going to buy it anyway. Boeing stock doesn't really care this morning. It's up about 0.7% on this news, $1.53, after falling 2.5% yesterday. Currently trading about $216.56. So, yeah, they're buying planes. That's good. Meanwhile, supermarkets hit back over pressure to cap the price of milk, bread, and eggs. Oh, price controls at the supermarket. It worked so well in Soviet Russia. Maybe it'll work well in the UK. Government ministers are pressing supermarkets on cutting costs for shoppers, but will not force them to cap prices on essentials such as eggs, bread, and milk. Multiple supermarket sources told the BBC that the government had urged them to voluntarily freeze the price of key groceries in return for an easing of regulations. On Wednesday, Treasury Secretary Dan Tomlinson confirmed talks with the sector had taken place about the steps that they can take to support people with the cost of living. The proposals, first reported by the Financial Times, come after the Scottish National Party pledged to introduce a similar policy in Scotland last month. However, its price cap would not be voluntary. Oh, price controls at the supermarket. Just a reminder, guys, price controls lead to shortages every single time. And so if we're going to cap the price of food, it means there's not going to be enough food. That's how it works. That's economics. Don't yell at me. Oh, but my feelings and my socialist professor at my liberal arts college said this thing. It doesn't matter. He's wrong. Price controls lead to shortages now, forever, always. Tomlinson told BBC Radio 4's Today program there were no plans to instill a mandatory price cap on food by the government in Westminster. Nope, we're just asking for voluntary price controls right now. I guess the mandatory ones come later. Sign of the times, guys. And as this is going on, we've got Indonesia seems to be nationalizing their natural resources. Indonesia's radical export experiment upends its commodity trade. Indonesia's radical plan to take control of key commodity exports has left the country's coal miners, palm oil producers, and traders racing to understand details of a policy that throws into upheaval one of the country's biggest industries. Rumors of an unprecedented shakeup began circulating on Tuesday and sent shares in Indonesian miners and palm producers sliding. Traders and producers questioned whether President Prabowo Subianto would take such a step, extreme even for an administration that has already sought to centralize state assets into a sovereign wealth fund, which answers to the president. Who does that? Who consolidates state assets into a sovereign wealth fund? Which answers to the president, who probably traded like $50 million worth of tech stocks last quarter. Who does that? Am I right? Then during a speech to lawmakers on Wednesday, Prabowo announced that starting with palm oil, coal, and ferro alloys, basically iron, one of the world's top commodity producers, would require all shipments to go through a government-created company. The effort, he said, was intended to curb under-invoicing and under-accounting and have a greater say in price. No, in other words, price controls. I see what we're doing here. This is resource nationalism on steroids, said Tom Price, senior commodities analyst at some investment bank, Panmure Liberum. The policy will eventually retard mining investment in Indonesia. It's a warning shot for nickel. Retard mining investment in Indonesia. In other words, price controls will eventually lead to shortages. Another one like that. That's funny. It's like there's something going around here. By the way, guys, palm oil and nickel in particular are vulnerable to this. Those are two of the big exports from Indonesia. And last but not least, Stellantis signs Europe joint venture with China's Dongfeng. What do you do when you spend tens of billions of euros on electric vehicle factories to make cars that nobody wants and you have to book hundreds of billions, tens of billions in losses? Then you just rent the factory out to the Chinese. They love to overproduce electric vehicles, so they'll do it in your house. The deal to bolster sales as the EU pushes car makers to produce more clean energy vehicles will see Dongfeng's Voya EVs built at Stellantis' plant in Rennes. That's in Western France. I'm sure I mispronounced that too. For the European market, the company said in a statement, by building locally, Dongfeng can avoid hefty EU tariffs on Chinese EV imports imposed as a way to protect domestic automakers. It's the latest move by Stellantis chief Antonio Filosa to revive sales and profits at the world's fourth largest automaker, in particular in Europe, where the shift away from combustion engines has sputtered. The company announced earlier this month a deal with Dongfeng to build Jeep and Peugeot models for the Chinese market and increase cooperation on technology research and development. All right, so Dongfeng is going to build Jeeps. I don't know that there's really a market for Jeeps in China, but Dongfeng is going to build Jeeps. And Stellantis is going to build, what are they, Dongfeng's Voyas, their Chinese electric vehicles? Again, we built all these factories. We've got nothing to do with them. Might as well rent them out to the Chinese. And guys, I just want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button. We got NVIDIA earnings after the bell. It's going to be a busy one tomorrow, I'm sure. But in the meantime, thank you so much to my magnanimous Melonhead supporters on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. There's links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time. Live small, dream big.